If your air conditioning or furnace stops working in the middle of the night, on a weekend, or over a holiday, there's no reason to wait to get it fixed. Because Atlas Butler's always open, and we never charge any overtime or after-hours fees.
The Atlas Butler family is here to keep your family safe and comfortable. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Hello and welcome to Letter from the Bureau, a special series which is part of The Straits Times Asian Insider podcast channel. I'm your host, ST's foreign editor, Bhagyashree Gareka. Now, the letter from the Bureau is like a scenic detour from news that keeps hitting the headlines. Wars, summits, elections, earthquakes, all kinds of trouble. We talk about life as it goes on amid all the crises. I chat each month with one of the Straits Times correspondents in the Asia-Pacific, the US and Europe. And they share with you interesting trends and events unfolding in their countries. In our 21st episode, we are speaking with ST's correspondent in Australia, Jonathan Perlman. It's good to have you on the show, Jonathan.
Thanks, Bhagya.
Now, you wrote something very interesting recently. You talked about how a very sports-obsessed Australia is now determined to become a top player in the field of arts and culture as well. Now, tell us a bit about why exactly your Prime Minister feels so passionately about arts and culture. Now, I know that he's known more as a rugby fan.
That's right. So our Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who was elected in May, he's from the Labor Party and defeated the coalition, which had been in power for a long time. He is definitely an unashamed fan of rugby league. He said he was born a fan of his league's club called the Rabbitohs. They're a Sydney club. And that is definitely not put on. I mean, he is a huge fan who's been involved with that club for a long time. So he's a big sports fan. But, you know, some prime ministers in Australia have championed their passion for sports, which works well for them politically. But a passion for arts doesn't always work well politically or isn't seen to. It's seen as sort of, you know, making the leader seem part of an elite and disconnected from everyday working families. So I suppose, I mean, it's a ridiculous perception because it assumes that, you know, everyday working families aren't interested in the arts. And of course, you know,
they don't read books, they don't go to movies.
Exactly. But that's been a kind of stereotypical approach that politicians have taken. And Albanese is a little bit different because despite his passion for rugby league, he's also very passionate about the arts. He represents an electorate which is in inner city Sydney and is, you know, is itself, you know, filled with artists and musicians and arts venues. So he has sort of never shied away from this. He's a huge music fan. His nickname is Albo Albanese. You know, he's commonly known as Albo, and he's sort of known as DJ Albo because he's gone on to radio shows and even at bars and DJed his favorite music. So he makes no attempt to shy away from his passion for the arts, which is a little bit new and refreshing in recent Australian politics.
Right. So as far as Australia goes, I mean, everybody knows of the Hollywood stars and the singers and so on. So we know Kylie Minogue, we know Kate Blanchett, Mel Gibson, of course. But give us an idea now of what is the art scene in Australia like? How big is it, for instance?
Yes, it's big. It's a huge part of Australia and part of the Australian economy, even if it's not, you know, not necessarily sufficiently valued always by policymakers. According to the government, the industry is worth about $17 billion and employs a total of 400,000 people. You know, and for every Kylie Minogue, you know, there's plenty of singers across the country who are less well known. And, you know, it's interesting to mention people like her or someone like, say, Kate Blanchett or Mel Gibson, who you mentioned. You know, they went to NIDA, which is a top performing arts school in Sydney. There's a number of performing arts schools in Australia which have really produced many, many great actors, directors over the years. Some of them remain in the theatre because that's their passion, and so they don't become well-known like a Cate Blanchett or a Hugh Jackman. But it's a very big scene covering all the arts, and it definitely extends beyond just sort of Kylie and Mel Gibson.
Right. But what about, say, writers? I'm trying to think of a top Australian writer, a Nobel Prize winner or a recent Booker winner.
Interesting. Richard Flanagan won the Booker Prize.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's been a long time since an Australian won the Nobel Prize for Literature. I think the only one was Patrick White many years ago, and who's probably not that well known today outside Australia. There's been a few attempts to nominate Australians. There was an incredible Australian poet named Les Murray who died quite recently. And, you know, obviously poetry is itself a kind of rarefied and refined world, which doesn't necessarily...
And a difficult sell.
Yeah.
A difficult sell anywhere in the world.
But he was recognized as one of the greatest poets, you know, when he was still living, one of the great living poets. Oh. He's really worth looking up. His mastery of language is incredible. You know, he lived in rural Australia, and yet he would sort of be acclaimed by the New York Times. So he was well known, and there were moves to nominate him for the Nobel Prize. There's a very strong literary scene, but in some ways maybe it's due to the publishing industry. It has been harder for some of those writers to break through abroad.
But the poet, he certainly sounds like someone I'd want to read. But tell us now, what are DJ Elbow's plans to raise Australia's arts profile?
Yes, so he and his arts minister went to, in characteristic form really, went to a pub in Melbourne, which is well known for its as a sort of live music venue, and released this new policy. They called it Revive, which was a sort of play on words because partly it's about reviving the live performing scene after COVID, which was, obviously artists were really, hit terribly hard during COVID, during lockdowns. But also because the coalition had cut a lot of arts funding, it's about sort of reviving the sector in the wake of coalition cuts. There's a number of important policies. One thing is they're putting a lot of money into it, about $300 million, into a new body called Creative Australia, which will fund new projects. And, that's across all fields of the arts. There's also, I think, an important move to try to get streaming services like Netflix to have a quota, to have a minimum quota of Australian content. Now, that's something that's always applied to commercial television stations and has resulted in shows like Neighbours, which produced Kylie Minogue and Guy Pearce. Those commercial TV stations had to make Australian shows, and it's not applying now to the streaming services, which is a little bit antiquated. So I think that will make a difference. And there's also moves to build some new art galleries and museums. Also, I think a really great project is their funding plans to get the major galleries and museums in places like Melbourne and Sydney to tour their works, particularly to regional areas, which often have less access to Australian culture and to galleries. So there's a number of policies in place. We'll have to see how it unfolds.
Find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or via the Google Voice Assistant and Amazon Alexa enabled devices. And now back to our podcast episode.
And now let's get back to my conversation with Jonathan Perlman, the Straits Times man in Australia. Creative Australia has a nice ring to it. But is there a straight-up commercial reason for why Mr. Albanese wants to revive the arts?
Yeah, I think there is. The scene itself, as we've seen, that $17 billion figure, it generates money, generates jobs. Scott Morrison, the former Prime Minister, who was more sort of on the sports side and not so much on the arts side, famously funded some money into the arts but tried to sell it as a way to help electricians and carpenters who were going to build stages. It wasn't so much about helping the arts. But the truth is that building the sector generates a whole lot of flow-on jobs in hospitality. If we have big live festivals here that attract people from around the world, well, that obviously produces jobs in the tourism and hospitality sectors. So there are strong commercial reasons. We've also seen, some of these Australian shows like Neighbours, which ran for years, particularly in Britain, but also some children's shows like Bananas in Pyjamas and Bluey.
High Five?
Yeah, High Five.
Exactly. High Five, I think.
There's a great children's arts scene in Australia, and it's produced some great shows, musicians, bands. So that brings in money. And I think finally there's a question of image and reputation. Australia's just won the rights to hold its third Olympic Games. It's going to be one of the few countries that's held three Olympics.
Wow.
You know, does Australia just want to be seen as a sports nation, or do we want to be seen as something more than that? And I think that if you promote the arts and culture scene in a country, it does help to broaden the country's reputation. And so I think that's really important as well.
Right. You spoke of electricians and plumbers and helping them. But, you know, what about the starving artist? I mean, they are found everywhere. You know, it's almost, there's a certain romanticism associated with that image, whether they are painters or writers and whatnot. So with Mr. Albanese's new policy, what kind of difference are you expecting to see on that? Does any money reach directly or help the artist directly?
So there have been criticisms that the policy doesn't go far enough. And there were some calls to trial something that's being done in Ireland at the moment, which is giving a basic minimum wage, you know, these calls for a basic minimum wage. So setting up basic minimum wages for artists, like choosing a number of artists and giving them just a basic wage. It's not even very much, but just enough so that they won't be starving. It is astounding how little some artists in Australia are making.
How little?
Well, there have been studies about analysis, particularly of writers and authors who are making as little as sort of $4,000 or $5,000 a year.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
Okay. There's very, very little money in it. And you know, these people are either taking second jobs or seeking, you know, sort of some welfare support, or a lot of them are relying on partners if they have partners who work.
But
you know, they're not living it up. And, you know, we hear about best-selling authors, but most aren't. So, you know, and I think you'd find that a lot in the music and theatre scene, and especially within, you know, in the music scene. Live streaming has really sort of changed the economics of the music industry in ways that don't always help artists. So there are a lot of struggling artists. I think there's probably more that the government could have done, but this is a start, or it seems to be a start, and certainly the extra funding hopefully will filter out to some of the new and upcoming voices in Australia.
So if they were given the minimum wage, how much would that be?
My guess is that it would be maybe $800 or $900 Australian dollars a week, which doesn't get you that far in a big city in Australia with rent soaring and inflation soaring. So we're not talking about huge sums of money, but we're just talking about basic amounts that would allow artists, you know, give them the opportunity to kind of practice their craft.
Yep, that sounds like something that should be done. And I'm sure the artists in Australia have received that idea with some sort of welcome. Well, it's been very interesting talking to you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Bhagya.
Thank you, Jonathan. And with that, it's a wrap from Letter from the Bureau. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you'd like to read Jonathan's column, we have a link for you in our podcast description box. And you will also find there a link to other stories in our Letter from the Bureau series.
That was a podcast by The Straits Times. Send your feedback to podcast@sph.com.sg. Find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or via the Google Voice Assistant and Amazon Alexa-enabled devices. For more podcasts by The Straits Times, The Business Times, and Money FM 89.3, you can also download the Audio by SPH app. That's AWEDIO.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.